Pro Basketball Talk Podcast. Brett Polakoff here with Kurt Helam. What is going on, Kurt?
Another good week. Getting ready for All-Star. I'm getting pumped for it.
Yeah, we're about a week away. All-Star reserves announced last night. We'll definitely get into some of that. But first off, let's do what we always do. Let's hit up those Thursday night TNT games. A good one between the Knicks and the Celtics last night in Boston. Knicks got a rather gritty 89-86 win. No fallout between the Carmelo Anthony, Kevin Garnett thing from the last time the Knicks and the Celtics got together. We didn't really expect any, to be honest. I mean, that sort of settled itself. First win in Boston for the Knicks since 2006. A lot of positive the Knicks can take away from this one. Carmelo Anthony and J.R. Smith both struggled from the field, still able to gut out that win. On the Celtics side, triple-double for Rajon Rondo, but not a whole heck of a lot else. Wanted to ask you about the Celtics and their offense. They're sixth in the league in team field goal percentage, which is obviously pretty darn good, but just 22nd in offensive efficiency. They're actually 0.2 away from being as low as 26th. What do you see as the problems with the Celtics offense, and why can't they score?
Because they're a jump shooting team right now. I mean, when you watch them, they don't get themselves easy buckets. They don't get stuff at the rim. They don't get to the free throw line, and that includes Paul Pierce, who used to do it a lot. They don't get to the free throw line nearly as much as they used to. And when they're looking at trades and they're looking at moves on the roster, big man or a way to score inside is huge for them. I mean, they're getting a lot out of Jared Sullinger as a rookie, but, you know, look, he's not the most athletic rookie ever. He's what they need, and he helps them. But they need more scoring inside so that Jason Terry hasn't lit it up for them. Courtney Lee hasn't lit it up for them. Rondo, I mean, the problem they've also got is Rondo and Paul Pierce are the only two people who can create their own shots right now.
Right.
And that puts so much pressure on them, too. I mean, you've got tremendous numbers from Rondo. He's been fantastic, but he can only carry this so far. They need, ideally, better shooters on the outside. They miss Ray Allen to a degree there. And, you know, they're not getting that production that I thought they'd get, frankly, out of Terry. But they've got to find a way to get some points in the paint and balance it. And if you look at the post we put up today at PBT, part of the problem they're going to run into is they don't really have tradable assets. Like, nobody really wants what they've got on the roster, or the things they want the Celtics aren't willing to give up. And because of that, they're really kind of stuck. They're going to have to find a way to make this internal. You know, their offense isn't that strong. And finally, their offense isn't that strong, but it's about exactly what it was last year. The problem is that their defense isn't quite what it was, and it just doesn't cover the mistakes. They used to be able to go not score for 6 minutes, and you wouldn't say anything because the other team only scored 4 points.
Right, right. Well, how much is that lack of outside shooting hurting Boston this season? Obviously, they lost Ray Allen, and really, you know, Jason Terry hasn't done anywhere close to what we thought he might do for this Celtics team. You know, Rondo's able to get that dribble penetration and kick it out, but if nobody's out there to knock down the shots, it doesn't really matter, does it?
No, exactly. They miss it, and that's why there's rumors starting to float around that they covet J.J. Redick, you know, but I covet winning lottery numbers. I'm not sure what they've got that's going to get them. They don't have anything on the roster that Orlando, a rebuilding team, you know, look at what they took back for Dwight Howard. There's nothing on the Celtics roster that they're going to give up, you know, Redick for, or at least nothing that the Celtics will give up.
So, yeah, talking about the Celtics trade possibilities, obviously, you know, as you said, you know, the news that, you know, hey, we want J.J. Redick, just, it was, you know, similar to the ridiculous, hey, the Lakers want Ryan Anderson. Well, sure they do, you know, but, you know, teams aren't exactly going to give up those assets, you know, for nothing. What do the Celtics have in terms of assets that they could trade to bring in somebody to help the team? You know, we don't know all the available players around the league, but who would the Celtics have that they could actually attract something, you know, of a post presence, like you said, something that could get them some easy inside buckets?
There, you know, there is some value in Jason Terry and Courtney Lee as trade bait because they're on really reasonable contracts.
Yeah.
So you they're not playing that well, but you might be able to move them for something. And with the, you know, another GM thinking, hey, if I got Jason Terry and gave him a bigger role or a different role, the ball in his hands more, maybe he could blossom for us the way he's not in Boston. What a lot of people are going to ask about, and the ones that they don't want to give up, are Sullinger and Avery Bradley.
Right.
You know, everybody wants your good young players. Nobody wants Jeff Green. I keep seeing Celtic fans tweeting me like, we could do this for Jeff Green. I don't think you could get a rack of shoot-around basketballs for Jeff Green at this
point. Yeah, and his contract situation is terrible, right? I mean, nobody's going to take that on.
That's the thing. I mean, it's not that he's just not producing. He's frankly exactly what Jeff Green is. He will give you spectacular nights followed by some really horrific nights. But at $9 million a year for multiple years after this, nobody's touching him.
Well, it'll definitely be interesting to watch to see if the Celtics do end up pulling the trigger. You know, obviously there's also been rumors that, you know, Danny Ainge isn't afraid to sort of blow things up. I find it very hard to believe that they'd send Paul Pierce out of town, but you never know.
Same here. I just can't see it.
All right, well, let's move on to the other TNT game. Suns took on the Clippers in Phoenix. Actually got the win over a shorthanded Clippers team, 93-88. Suns 2-0 now after the coaching change under Lindsey Hunter, who's, you know, really trying to make a defensive identity out of this Suns team. Their offense remains a problem. We'll get into that in a little bit. But Suns' defense against the Clippers really were the story. Obviously, the Clippers still without Chris Paul due to that bruised kneecap. He might even miss a couple more games. You know, Clippers are in no hurry to bring that guy back as long as, you know, they're still third place or so in the Western Conference standings. The Suns held the Clippers to 39.8% from the field. You know, that's not good for a Clippers team that is one of the best offensively. Game was a little bit chippy, kind of physical. A lot of guys took inadvertent shots to the face, believe it or not. Some were called, some not by the officials. Goran Dragic got laid out pretty hard, got really just bounced off the floor on a fast break in the second half. Refs called it a flagrant because you're allowed to review flagrant fouls, but then upon review, they changed their mind. The strength of this Clippers team has really been their depth. I mean, sure, you've gotten sensational performances from Chris Paul and Blake Griffin. Jamal Crawford off the bench, you know, probably leading candidate for sixth man of the year. Crawford was fine last night, you know, 21 points from him off the bench. Rest of the bench, though, just 7 for 32 from the field. You know, you had Grant Hill 1 for 8. Lamar Odom looks terrible still, 2 for 11 for him. If you can shut down those Clippers bench guys, you know, double team Jamal Crawford, how beatable is this Clippers team? And again, it's not the same team without Chris Paul, but still, don't they need their bench guys to do a lot better than they did last night?
They certainly do, and I think the other thing I saw in this game, and I went and saw the Clippers last weekend against the Washington Wizards, and the Wizards, you know, playing a lot better with Wall back and with Nene back. They've just been a better team the last few weeks and winning games. But what they did really well and what the Suns did was they took away a lot of the easy baskets. I mean, yeah, Blake Griffin got some dunks, but if you can take away the thing that really gets them going, that, you know, take care of the ball, don't turn it over, don't let them get out in transition and have the, you know, the high-flying alley-oops and the big show, and you make them work for their points, they're a little more beatable. And I think the Suns did a really nice job of that defensively, just taking away the easy buckets. And you're right, they took the Clippers bench kind of just out of the mix. And if you can do that, they're much more beatable, which makes it interesting in the playoffs to see how Vinny Del Negro deals with that and how he deals with the depth and how he shortens the rotations and who he plays when it matters.
Yeah, and you mentioned Del Negro. That's exactly where I was going next, because DeAndre Jordan does not get a lot of minutes. He starts for the Clippers. He's super athletic in there. I think he played less than 20 minutes last night. He was asked about it after the game. Basically said, you know, he needs to see more aggressiveness out of him if he wants to get on the floor and play those fourth quarter minutes. But I just think when you're relying on like Ronnie Turioff, Matt Barnes, Lamar Odom down the stretch of tight games, I mean that's you know you're asking for trouble there. And I think DeAndre Jordan, the Clippers are going to have to figure him out and figure out how to get enough out of him. He needs to be on the floor with them in crunch time, because when he and Blake Griffin are both in there, they're a nightmare to defend. You know, the ball, they just play volleyball with the offensive rebounds in there. You know, Vinny Del Negro is definitely going to have his hands full with this Clippers team and managing those rotations.
I agree. And, you know, when you're talking to DeAndre Jordan, he lost his minutes in the playoffs last year to Reggie Evans, because Reggie Evans you could count on for rebounding and some defense and some flops.
Yeah.
But right now is when you play him, even if it costs you some games, to get him this experience. And I don't think you can sit on him like this. I think that now is when you play him regardless, and you figure it out. Because he's been a lot better this year. He's been a lot more consistent. And I think one of the big leaps for them is that he and Blake Griffin are much better together defensively as a back line than they were last year. That was one of the reasons, you know, you just couldn't play them at the end of games in the together. But to me, right now is when, especially when you're the Clippers and you've got some ground you can afford to burn a little bit, you have got to play them together. You've got to make that work, because you're not going to challenge the Thunder in the West without those two both being on the floor in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, or even the Spurs maybe. And I agree, you know, just why not play the guy in the fourth quarter and then just coach him, you know, during timeout, just tell him, hey, here's what I'm not seeing from you. I'm going to leave you in there because we need to work this out. But I agree, you know, you got to give the guy some opportunity. Over on the Suns side, you know, we've seen a lot more tenacity on the defensive end of the floor since Lindsey Hunter took over. The Suns offense still has plenty of issues, though. I mean, they're still a disaster. I mean, late in that game, they struggled to even get the ball in bounds. You had to burn a bunch of timeouts. They struggled to get a shot off on a lot of those late-game possessions. So offensively, you know, they're still going to struggle on nights, and they're not going to be able to shut teams down and hold them under 90 points on a regular basis. But what do you see out of this Suns team as far as, you know, their prospects for the rest of the season?
Yeah, I mean, I think you're trying to build a culture, and I think that, as you have said and written for us a few times this week, that was part of the reason for the change, was trying to kind of alter the culture going on in the Suns locker room. They're not going to be good. You know, that Michael Beasley isn't suddenly going to become good. They're, right. They're going to struggle, but you start to build a culture of winning. I think you see it in Orlando right now, where for all their problems, those guys ball for Jacque Vaughn. I mean, and you can start to see that they might be able to build something there once they get more talent on the roster. And that's, I think, what you want to start to see in Phoenix. And clearly, Banks believes in Hunter and thinks he can be the guy to do the job no matter what, you know, Marley thinks. So
yeah.
It's going to be interesting, but he gets, you know, he's going to get his chance. And, you know, I don't know that you can read much into 2-0, but, you know, they are showing more on the defensive end, and that's a start.
Yeah, and it's funny you mentioned Orlando, because after they lost in Orlando earlier this season, Jared Dudley said exactly what you said. He's like, you know, we need to model ourselves after this team. You know, they don't have a lot of, you know, star talented players, but they're playing gritty every night and they're playing together and they're finding ways to win. So it'll be interesting to see how it plays out and how long it lasts. Obviously, teams, you know, get a bump in energy when they make a coaching change usually. So, you know, we'll see how long it lasts. Well, I was able to catch up before the game last night with Chauncey Billups of the Clippers. Kind of got an update from him in terms of how he's feeling health-wise. Also mentioned Jamal Crawford's being left off the All-Star team, and Billups was definitely disappointed, so he talked to us a little bit about that.
First of all, how you feeling health-wise?
I'm feeling good. I'm getting better. Getting better all the time, and just trying to keep progressing from this point forward, and back on the court now, just kind of working out and working myself back, you know, and it feels good to just kind of be back out and sweating and with the basketball in my hand.
Any timetable at all for when we can expect you back?
Nah, I don't really have a timetable. I'm just kind of playing by ear and just trying to keep getting better.
With the team playing as well as they are, it's not really any hurry for you to get back out there personally, right? You just want to make sure you're 100% when you do get out.
Well, yeah, I just want to get right, you know what I mean? No matter how the team is doing, I feel like we've established ourselves as one of the elite teams, and we're healthy, we can play and can beat anybody, and I want to be able to come back and be able to help that.
How much big picture talk is there around this team in terms of looking towards the playoffs, looking towards what you guys might be able to accomplish this season?
Well, I think for us, everything is big picture. It's not about a game against Phoenix or Portland in January. It's about just getting better and trying to be playing our best basketball in April. Going into the playoffs, and everything else is kind of preliminary. But you just want to get better all the time.
And then finally, thoughts on Jamal Crawford. Obviously, he was not selected as an All-Star reserve, but many thought he should have been.
Yeah, it's disappointing, man. I think Jamal is definitely deserving. I thought he definitely deserved it this year. I mean, he's played an unbelievable role on this team, which is a really good team. He has a lot of responsibility on this team, and his responsibility is pretty much the same as most any other All-Stars that come in, and when the team is struggling, try to put him on your back and bring us back to life. And he rarely lets us down, man. I feel bad that he didn't make it, because he really deserves it.
Is part of that just because you guys already have two All-Stars? It's kind of a good problem to have that much talent on the team.
I can't say that that's part of it. You know, that shouldn't really matter. I was on the team with four one time, so, and three a couple times. So I don't think that really matters, because at the end of the day, none of the coaches had to vote for Chris or Blake anyway. So that shouldn't matter. You know what I mean?
All right. And then speaking about those All-Star reserves, you know, Jamal Crawford was one of the snubs, especially on a winning Clippers team. Reserves were announced on Thursday night in the Eastern Conference. We had Kyrie Irving, Paul George, Drew Holiday, Tyson Chandler, and Joakim Noah all getting first-time All-Star selection. So that was kind of nice to see. Chris Bosh got in, as did Luol Deng. In the Eastern Conference, who are the guys, you know, that you deserve or that you feel deserve to get in that were left off?
You know, I feel the East was a little smoother than the West, but also I think it was a little more clear-cut. You know, you can make some cases that maybe Kyrie Irving didn't earn it over Brandon Jennings, but I think Irving deserved to be there. Paul Pierce is leading the Celtics in scoring, and could you put him in instead of Deng or Brook Lopez? I think, you know, if I was gonna pick one guy who I felt kind of bad for, it was Brook Lopez, who's actually played phenomenally well this year and has been like the best offensive center in the NBA.
Yeah.
But I didn't have him on my list either. I had Tyson Chandler in front of him, so I don't have a problem with it.
Yeah, I mean, to me, Brook Lopez is by far the biggest, you know, snub in the Eastern Conference. I mean, his numbers are good. He's playing on a winning team. You know, definitely that hurts to not have any representation from the Nets, who have actually played much better since making their coaching change, bringing in P.J. Carlesimo. I have no problem with Kyrie Irving. He's one of the most dynamic point guards in the game. All-Star game is an exhibition. You want guys like that in the game to make it fun. It is a bummer for Brandon Jennings because he's having another good year. He's always like this bubble guy. He can never seem to kind of get over the hump and get into the game. It always seems like there's a couple guys ahead of him. And then, you know, you had J.R. Smith, who's had a pretty awesome season off the bench, but just, you know, there's just really not enough room to get all these guys on the team.
No, exactly. And I think that's been it will become a going forward issue. I think there's starting to be some momentum towards putting 15 guys on the team, and that makes the coaching job harder because not as many guys get minutes, you know, during the game, and how do you play them all. And frankly, if you put 15 guys on the game, you know what we're going to sit here and argue about next year? Who 16 was.
Yeah, exactly. Just like March Madness, who's number 65, 66, you know, there's always going to be these bubble guys on or these bubble teams. Over in the Western Conference, reserves were Tony Parker, James Harden, Russell Westbrook, Tim Duncan, Zach Randolph, LaMarcus Aldridge, and David Lee. You know, a little bit to talk about over there in the West, but who do you think was were the biggest names left off of that roster?
Well, I think Steph Curry is obviously the biggest name left off of that roster. I mean, 20.9 points a game, 6.6 assists, 41.5% from three. Let's be honest, he's the best pure shooter in the game right now. It's kind of hard to leave him off there. But the thing is, you know, when I put together my reserve list, I left him off there because I can't put him on in front of Westbrook. I can't put him on in front of Harden. And I spent a lot of time looking at the numbers and debating it, and I lean to Tony Parker. I think he's had a better first half of the year. But I feel bad for Curry because in that situation, you know, maybe he's the guy in the bubble and maybe you switch someone else out. And if I can't get Curry in, I don't know how I get Jamal Crawford in.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, the only argument for Crawford is that, you know, the Clippers don't have that record without him. You know, yes, he comes off the bench. You know, just as Billups mentioned when I spoke with him, you know, having three people on the team of a good or winning team really shouldn't be a factor, but, you know, clearly it was. And I think, you know, to your point, the fact that Curry was ahead of him and they couldn't find a place for him, you know, there's no way Crawford's getting on at that point.
Yeah, I think the problem is you could easily go five or six deep with West guards and be naming quality guys who deserve to be there. And, you know, somewhere that line gets drawn, it just unfortunately got drawn in front of Curry.
Yeah, and so, you know, looking at Memphis, Zach Randolph gets in this season, but Marc Gasol does not. You know, Randolph has the better numbers between the two of them, but honestly, he probably doesn't have those numbers if he's not playing right alongside Gasol.
Yeah, those two almost are a unit, and I, you know, the guy I think got left off among the bigs in the West was Serge Ibaka, who I think has had a really stepped up his game. You know, 14 points a game, he's shooting 56%, he's pulling down 8.3 rebounds a game, and he's become a bigger offensive option, you know, in Oklahoma City. I would love to have seen him get a chance, but I don't have a big issue with Zach Randolph because he's played at an all-star, near all-star level for a few years now.
I would agree with Ibaka to a certain extent. If you put him on, I think you're probably, if you're voting between all those big guys that we mentioned, you're probably looking at LaMarcus Aldridge, right? Because he, you know, Portland's been kind of up and down. You know,
Aldridge had that really slow start, and I think I put him on my reserve list, but it's really based on what he's done over the last month, maybe 3 weeks to a month over the kind of a bad start that he had to the season. And if you're not going to overlook that start, then yeah, you know, you could put Ibaka in, or, you know, Marc Gasol in there too. I mean, you could have gone a few different ways.
Yeah, and LaMarcus has been amazing like the last month or so. So, I mean, it's not really an argument. It's not that he's not, you know, talented enough. It's more about the team, and does somebody else maybe deserve it a little more given the entire body of work. But really, hasn't Damian Lillard been sort of the best player on Portland? So if you're not going to have your best player on, can you really have your second best?
Yeah, he's certainly – I mean, he's taken over that offense and controlling it from the outside. And you know, the more I watched him, and I watched a bunch of stuff and some old film of film from him recently of his play, he's still learning. I mean, he's still got to become a little more efficient. There's still things he's got to learn to do, but he is so taken charge of that offense, and that's benefited Aldridge.
Well, it'll be interesting to see all these guys in Houston a few weeks from now. Let's talk about something that we always love to talk about, which is the disaster in Los Angeles around the Lakers. You know, we have a team stacked with talent that still, as we're approaching the All-Star break, hasn't yet figured things out. The latest talk this week is, hey, should we fire D'Antoni? Let's fire our second coach of the season, because firing the first one worked out so well. And then there's the Dwight Howard stuff, right? There's Kevin Ding of the Orange County Register. He posted something on Twitter that was really interesting, which was basically a report of Dwight Howard's post-game activities after the loss in Memphis. You know, Ding said that, you know, the team was really looking to get out of town kind of quickly, like just put that loss behind them. Let's pack up, get on the bus, get to the airport. He laid it out in pretty good detail that Howard took a very long time to get out of the arena. You know, he doesn't have to speak to reporters. I never fault players for not speaking to the media. I don't, you know, if they do or don't, who cares? But he was sitting in the locker room forever, took a long time to get out. All the players were gone, even Kobe, who's notoriously slow after games for, you know, showering, getting treatment, and then speaking with the media before getting out of there. Everybody's gone. Dwight's still there. He goes out to the arena, takes pictures with like 20 fans, everybody's on the bus waiting for him, and then he finally, you know, heads out. So all that being said, Dwight just seems like a bad teammate at this point. You know, the talk came out that he was, you know, sort of mocking Kobe behind his back, which again, Dwight's a clowning guy, so there's probably nothing to that in terms of, you know, resentment or anything like that. But, you know, his personality has not seemed to be meshing with this Lakers team this season. What are you seeing out of Dwight Howard right now? And, you know, a lot of talk about trading maybe Pau Gasol at the deadline. What about trading Howard if they feel that, hey, maybe this guy isn't going to re-sign in Los Angeles after this season?
If he gives them a clear indication that he's going to leave, then they don't have a choice. But I don't think that's the case. Everything I hear from the Lakers side of it is they don't want to trade him. They see him as the long-term future. He's the guy. They bought in, clowning or not, but they think of him as a teammate or not. He's the guy. They want to re-sign him this summer. And frankly, after his debacle in how he handled leaving Orlando, I don't think he wants to go forcing his way out of Los Angeles onto the trade market. He doesn't want to go, frankly, probably through a free agency. All things being equal, I think he ends up coming back. We'll see how the losing starts to wear on them and how that starts to change the dynamic. But my guess is they keep him. The bigger question then becomes, can he work with D'Antoni to me? I mean, that's ultimately, you're trying to build a winning franchise. Are you going to do it around your player and play to his strengths? Or are you going to do it with Mike D'Antoni and play to his system? Because you're going to have to tweak this roster one way or another, or bring in a coach to fit it. The pieces on the roster and the coaching system and everything don't fit right now. And you've got to start moving the pieces around to make them fit. And that's either got to be D'Antoni or a lot of players to move around. And then you've also got to convince Dwight Howard that he's a really good pick-and-roll center and to play some pick-and-roll and not whine about getting the ball in the post.
Well, yeah, and that's, you know, there's a lot of issues there to work through. First of all, Dwight Howard giving anybody a clear indication of what he wants. I don't think we're ever going to see that out of this guy.
Exactly.
You know, based on what we saw in Orlando this season. And again, not because he's a bad guy, it's because he doesn't know. And because, you know, the guys he has surrounding him, you know, in his camp, you know, they don't give him great advice. You know, it's clear. We saw the way things were handled in Orlando last season, that Dwight does not get good advice and he doesn't know how to handle himself. And his decisions, you know, change seemingly day to day. So I don't know if the Lakers are going to get a clear indication, but what you said about D'Antoni is absolutely right in that Dwight Howard's a post player. D'Antoni is not going to run a post-entry offense. So something's got to give there. Either D'Antoni has to bend a little and say, okay, look, I'll put in some sets for Dwight to get the ball in the post a few times per game just to appease the guy. And then they have to start building guys that are more of like a stretch four that can, you know, bigs that could space the floor with their shooting. There's no question the Lakers want to keep Dwight long term. Kobe Bryant isn't going to be playing forever. He's going to be gone in a couple years. They need somebody younger with a big personality that they can market the team around. You can't go through a full-fledged rebuild if you're the Lakers. Not in that market. Not with the amount of money that they have available to spend on payroll. It's just not going to work. You know, they're gonna lose revenue. People aren't going to come out to the games to see a bunch of scrubs wearing those Laker jerseys. So they do need some star power there. I know they want to keep Dwight long-term to have that sort of face of the franchise once Kobe's gone. I'm just not sure if the dynamic is going to be there to allow them to do that between D'Antoni's system, Dwight's whims, and, you know, if the losing continues and the media keeps piling on, Dwight might decide, hey, maybe I don't want to be in a big market. Maybe that's not for me.
Yeah, and to me, a lot of this just all comes back to management. It all comes back to Jim Buss and, to a degree, Mitch Kupchak, because they're the architects of this. They had to know that Dwight Howard's a post player and what he likes to do, and they had to know what Mike D'Antoni's system is and that he doesn't bend it that much because he didn't in New York when his players didn't fit. So it comes back to choices made at the top to me. It's not – I don't really blame D'Antoni. I think I put this in the paper, you know, on the blog today, that, you know, asking him to change his system, you might as well be asking a lion to become a vegetarian.
Yeah.
You're asking him to go against his nature. He is in this for winning his way. He is an ideologue, and you have to accept that. And if you're not going to build a team to fit his system, then you've got to get another coach. And I don't know that, you know, it puts the Laker management in a hard position, but they put themselves there. They assembled this roster with this coach, throwing pieces together, not really thinking about the fit, and now they're stuck.
Yeah, they're definitely not going to fire another coach the same season. I mean, that's just that. There's no way that happens for a variety of reasons. You know, the most interesting thing to me, like as bad as the Lakers have been this season, and as much as they've disappointed, and you know, frankly, as much as of a mess as they look on the court, they're only four games out of the playoffs still. At this point, you know, there's four teams ahead of them. Sure, you got Dallas, Minnesota, Portland, and Houston, but none of those teams seem capable, maybe Dallas, of, you know, really coming together and putting on a strong second half of the season. What are your thoughts on the Lakers' playoff chances? I know right now they look terrible, but it's still within reach, isn't it?
I haven't seen any indication they're going to play well enough to do this.
Yeah.
You know, right now the 8 seed Portland is 21-21. I don't think the 8 seed in the West is going to be a 500 team. I think you're going to have to win 44, 45 games. And I just don't see anything in the Lakers so far that tells me that they can put together that kind of run, because they're not going to get – this isn't a situation where they can get on a run and somebody's going to come back to them, because – Minnesota's not playing that great. Dallas isn't, you know, they're making a nice little run. They're ahead of the Lakers now, but, you know, we'll see if they cool off. But Houston is in there, and they're actually playing pretty well, and they're 500, and Portland's 500. The Jazz are only a couple games ahead of that. So it's – I don't think any team is coming back to the Lakers. The Lakers are going to have to go catch them, and the reason I think their playoff chances are done is that I haven't seen anything from them that says that they can put together the kind of 10-win run they need to get back in this thing.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. And honestly, they just need to put together like a 2-win run, you know, to get things started. They got, you know, at some point they're going to have to start winning games if they want to make that a reality. They have Utah at home tonight and OKC at home on Sunday. They're probably not beating the Thunder. And, you know, Utah can give teams trouble. So,
And the other part of that is, after that game on Tuesday, it is the Grammy road trip. You know, the Lakers are on the road where they have not been impressive for 7 straight games. So when does this run come together?
Yeah, looking more and more like never. So we'll have to wait and see. The most interesting thing around the Lakers is going to be as the trade deadline approaches. So, you know, we'll definitely keep our eyes out on that. All right, well, that's all the time we have for this week. Make sure to leave us some comments. Let us know how we're doing. And, Kurt, look forward to speaking with you next time.
Talk to you then.